In the studio, I'm very happy to have, as I mentioned earlier, Josh Mogerman from the Natural Resources Defense Council. Josh, welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. What's your official title? I know you got an official title. Everybody's got an official title.
I'm just the talking guy.
That's it. I like that title.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there is... there's a rule of thumb that your importance is inversely proportional to the length of your title. So the longer the title, the less power you actually have.
Mine's very, very short. I'm the dude.
So you're a very powerful guy. And on his left is Michelle Parker. Who's the Vice President of Great Lakes and Sustainability, which is a reasonably short title.
Ooh, I hope so.
at the Shedd Aquarium.
Yes.
It's so nice to have you here.
Thank
you for coming to the studio.
Absolutely.
I haven't talked about Asian carp in a while on the show. Not that things haven't been happening, although some folks would say things are not happening fast enough. And Josh is nodding. And the way this works is we've got the educational component over there with Michelle Parker. And then we've got the political aspect of it with Josh Mogerman. And I think this is going to be a good balance. You know, it's interesting. I say I haven't discussed this in a while. And when you look at the things going on in the world and some of the issues that get discussed on this show, like what we're going to do in the second part of this hour, which is tar sands, oil, and energy policy, and frack sand mining and fracking itself, which are important issues. And then you say Asian carp. And the word carp is funny, all right? This is a punchline, all right? So, you know, it doesn't have a K in it, but it's still a funny word.
Carp. Well, if you're dyslexic, it's really, really good.
Right, exactly. Actually, I had a joke in mind, yesterday as I was preparing, and of course I didn't write it down, so it went out. But it had to do with being dyslexic about carp. Yes, all that carp, something like that. But in the scheme of things, it really is serious. It does fit in with those other issues because we need to protect our Great Lakes. And I guess I start with you, Michelle, because that's what the Shedd is trying to get out and to educate people to, is the certain danger of not just Asian carp, but other invasive species in our Great Lakes. Maybe in a nutshell, you can start there. Why would Asian carp be dangerous to be in the Great Lakes?
Gosh, Asian carp, invasive species as a whole, have huge potential to upend entire ecosystems. Asian carp is the poster child of this these days. You know, they're working their way up the rivers. They're heading towards the Great Lakes. The main issue behind Asian carp is what they eat and how much they eat. So
they're huge.
They're huge.
I mean, we're talking a 100-pound fish.
Yes. We have several at Shedd, and we have some big head carp that are over 60 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Huge fish.
And there are two species in particular that we're worried about.
Yes,
right.
The silver carp and the big head carp.
Mm-hmm.
There are other species of Asian carp that don't get as much press that everybody's keeping their eye on. But when you hear the phrase Asian carp in the media, they're usually referring to silver or big head.
Could the others wreak havoc as well?
Oh, yes. Yep, absolutely.
Do they all fly out of the water, or are we looking at other... The main concern, I would think, is the fact that they are such great consumers of food.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So... on average, the percentage is a little bit controversial. You hear a lot of percentages. Shedd goes with about 20% of their body weight that they can eat every day. So if you're dealing with a 100-pound fish and they're eating 20% of their body weight in plankton every day, that's 20 pounds of plankton. And plankton is the very basis of the food chain. So if you have Asian carp in a body of water, say in the Great Lakes, and they are chowing down on plankton, they will be out-competing our native species. So not only can they eat an enormous amount of plankton, but they also reproduce early and often. And so they just multiply, and that effect of wiping out the food chain just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So when we think about Asian carp as a direct threat to the ecosystem, we do think about them in terms of really undermining the entire food web for the lake system.
All right. Let me play devil's advocate here. We have already had a number of species, exotic invasives, come into the Great Lakes. The lamprey, the zebra mussels, the quagga mussels. How do you pronounce that? Is that
quagga.
Right? It is quagga. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I got it right. How about that? and isn't there an argument to be made that, well, the damage is already done?
Well, I would actually say you can look at those invasive species as a lesson that they have caused quite a bit of damage, and to get rid of those invasive species would be nearly impossible, if not fully impossible. So the very best thing we can do is prevent new invasive species. We don't want to find ourselves in a position where Asian carp have established themselves in the Great Lakes or any of the inland rivers and lakes that they might travel to from the Great Lakes, because once they're established, then you have a lifelong problem you have to deal with. Mm-hmm. So let's learn from the quaggas, and let's learn from the gobies, and let's learn from the lampreys, and make that decision of, we can't let these fish in because they're just going to cause these forever problems. Josh, do you know how much money we're spending on lamprey control these days?
I don't, but nationally we spend $1 billion every 5 years on aquatic nuisance species. So this is not an insignificant economic impact. It's something we have to spend a lot of money on nationally. And here in Chicago, we have a very unique sort of responsibility because we sit at the connection between these two really great freshwater ecosystems in North America. And the carp give us this really fascinating, unique opportunity, because usually with a biological invasion, you don't see things coming until it's too late. When you start to see this invasive species, game over, you're done. In the case of Asian carp, they make their presence very clear. Anyone who's watched these YouTube videos can see how we have this really amazing opportunity. And you know, pushing back on your original point, yes, we've allowed these ecosystems to become degraded, but saying, well, they're kind of messed up now, let's just let them get progressively more and more messed up, I think doesn't make a lot of sense. And I think there are a lot of people who care about both of those systems. You know, the Mississippi River system is sort of like the stepchild that doesn't get the love. You hear people from Peoria complaining all the time about, oh, you know, nobody cared about Asian carp when they were coming by the Illinois River. And that's true. We need to be thinking about both of these ecosystems and stopping the movement of species between the two. And that happens here in Chicago in the waterway system. When we reverse the Chicago River, we accidentally open the door to what has become an invasive species superhighway, where the invasive species that come into the Great Lakes through ballast water go through our rivers and into the Mississippi River system and infect vast swaths of the United States. You can look at...
Well, the Mississippi River system is fully 40% of the country.
Yeah, and you think about all the other tributaries that now break off of that. You look at Lake Mead and Hoover Dam, and there are startling photos right now because of the drought in the West. You can see the water levels have lowered, and you can see the sides of Lake Mead are covered in quagga mussel shells. Those quagga mussels and those zebra mussels that have made their way all the way to west from they started
from
that
the,
exit
from the Great Lakes,
from the Great Lakes through the Chicago waterway,
and they came
systems.
in the ballast of these boats. And now these ships aren't they're regulated in that you have to control the ballast water.
There is a new general vessel permit which requires them to deal with this issue more stringently. We actually think there's a lot of work that still needs to be done. We don't think the standard is strong enough.
That is Josh Mogerman from the Natural Resources Defense Council. Also in the studio, Michelle Parker from the Shedd Aquarium. All right, Michelle, so you at the Shedd want to get this word out, and you've got a curriculum, a new curriculum called Asian Carp Exploration. Mm-hmm. What's that all about?
Oh, this is fun. So we created this.
Oh, if you consider carp fun. All right. 100-pound carp fun. Yeah, okay.
Josh.
They're super fun. In a very dangerous way. Yeah.
So this curriculum, it's an online curriculum. It's for 7th through 9th graders. And they can go on with the help of their teachers, and it's a choose-your-own-adventure. So they can study the Asian carp issue from a variety of different stakeholder point of views. So they can be looking at it in terms of engineers, industrialists, whatever it might be. And then they work their way through the curriculum, and we invite them to create a YouTube video to present their own solutions. What do they think should be done? Mm. And some of them, I hope many of them, can actually take all the different paths so they can learn about it from all the different stakeholders. They'll upload these videos, submit them to SHED, and then when the contest time, you could say, is over, SHED is going to choose a video, and then we'll go to the school and help them create a professionally made, professionally produced kind of PSA about Asian carp.
Is this going to be ongoing, or is there, you know, one shot at this? And when what's the deadline for this?
As of right now, we're planning for the spring, and we'll see how it goes. If it's really successful, if there's a lot of interest, it's certainly something we'd consider continuing.
And you've also done a series of videos called, yes, High Stakes for the Great Lakes.
Yes. And both of these projects, the curriculum and the videos, were supported by the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative. And we had identified that there was...
Explain what the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative is.
It's a federal funding source that goes towards restoration and education and Great Lakes improvement opportunities. And it's a significant pot of money that goes out every year, hundreds of millions of dollars. It would be... I encourage all readers to look it up online and see some of the projects that have done, mm-hmm, that have been done. They're all around the basin. Really impressive projects. For us, we had recognized that there was kind of a two-step back need with this Asian carp issue. And that is that a lot of people didn't understand even the basics behind Asian carp. They didn't understand what the threats were. They didn't understand what the issue was. We have partners all around the Great Lakes Basin as far as Quebec City. And they did not think it was a basin issue. They thought it was a Chicago issue. So SHED recognize this need to...
And let me explain something. That you've got these two basins. One is the Great Lakes,
yes,
which, and you know the size of the Great Lakes, and it covers that whole territory all the way out to the Gulf of, not Gulf of Mexico, the St. Lawrence Seaway.
Yes.
And then you've got the basin, which is the Mississippi River Basin, as, right, we said, which covers 40% of the country.
Exactly. It's huge. It's huge.
And they're separate. And that's the other thing. I don't think, because we're connected now, I'm not sure everybody understands that these are separate. The water flows in different directions.
Yes, yes. So they're connected through the Chicago area waterway system, which was a man-made system.
Right.
So we definitely recognize this need to take this very complex issue and break it down so people had something to work with. And so that's why we created the three-part video series, which anybody can access on our website, shedaquarium.org/Great Lakes. We talk about kind of the glory and the splendor of the Great Lakes, what's at stake. We have a video solely on Asian carp and what the issues are behind Asian carp. And then the last video is about how issues like Asian carp can drive creativity and innovation in engineering, science, technology in the marketplace. And we talk about a few of the options that scientists and engineers are working on right now. We've started evaluating the videos. We show them before our aquatic show in the Abbott Oceanarium at SHED, and which sees about 2 million people every year. We've started evaluating them, and we've been getting some really interesting feedback. We're finding a lot of people are really surprised to learn about the electric barriers. They didn't know that they existed.
That amazes me. I mean, it was all over the news several years ago.
Yeah, people aren't aware of them?
They're unaware of them.
I just don't understand how it works.
That's another part of it. You need to watch our videos because we talk about it. So the electric barriers, just to make it very simple, I'm sure it's much more technical than this, is it creates an irritant in the water. And so as the fish are coming closer to the electric barrier, they become uncomfortable and they'll turn around and go the other way.
Ah, but as we're going to talk about when we come back from break, not all of them do.
Right.
We're finding out that fish are going through the electric barrier.
Yes.
We found this out in July of last year or thereabouts, and it didn't get that information wasn't presented to the public until December, and you're nodding there, Josh. And that's disturbing, too, that it takes 6 months for us to even hear from our government about something that concerns us so greatly.
Right.
So we've done the educational part with Michelle Parker from the Shedd Aquarium. If you want that information, go to my website, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show. I've got the link to the Shedd and the Asian Carp Exploration curriculum, the videos, High Stakes for the Great Lakes, a lot of articles that we're going to get to in just a second, including a remarkable, I got to tell you, Josh, you turned me on to this Milwaukee Journal Sentinel story, which is fabulous and just outlines everything. I mean, they go through in such detail. It's just amazing. In the studio with me are Michelle Parker. She is the Vice President of Great Lakes and Sustainability at the Shedd Aquarium. Josh Mogerman from the Natural Resources Defense Council is also here. We're talking right now Asian carp. And let's go to the controversy. Let's start with you, Josh, here, because in January, the Army Corps of Engineers, they had been pushed by Congress to come up with a report. They were saying, well, you know, maybe around 2015 we'll come out with something. And a few really smart people said, no, that's not going to work. You better do it now. And so they came up with these various solutions for how to fix the problem. And as I write on my website, people's heads began to explode after they did that. Why did people's heads begin to explode?
Well, so this report comes as a result of, like you said, congressional action. Senator Durbin was one of the co-sponsors of a bill that forced them to stop taking their sweet time and start getting to the hard work of designing a solution for this issue. The report comes out with much fanfare. There are a series of potential scenarios that you could do to take action to stop that range from nothing to some fairly elaborate systems that would physically create a barrier, but they had inordinately huge price tags and timelines associated with them. $15 or $18 billion, 25 years. Anybody who's watching this probably can agree that 25 years is too long to wait. This is an invasion that is happening in real time.
Maybe they're not aware that 25 years is a quarter century. I'm not sure that the Corps of Engineers has actually figured that out.
Oh, I think they're very aware.
And that's part of the problem. Yeah. A lot of folks see this as just a move to stall and muddy the waters, the carp-laden waters.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that's striking, you referenced the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. They have a reporter there, Dan Egan, who is really fantastic. He is the Great Lakes reporter in the region. He's been all over this story from the get-go over the years. And his takedown in the Journal Sentinel last week really stress something that I think all of the advocates have been concerned about, that $15 billion price tag is largely built around things that need to be done anyway. The Chicago waterway system, the Chicago River, the Calumet River, the rivers that we cross over every day here in Chicago, it's a broken system. It doesn't do very well in terms of dealing with the stormwater issues that we foist on it. It's really not that great for moving goods. We hear about issues with barges all the time. And it's broken. It needs to be fixed. The vast majority of the dollars in that $15 billion price tag that we keep seeing in the media all the time have to do with fixing the waterway. They're things we have to do anyway. The amount of money that we would spend to actually do the work to stop the movement of the carp and the other scores of aquatic nuisance species trying to move through our waterways from both of those systems is a small fraction of that and would take significantly less than that 25-year time period. And so I think advocates like us, like the Alliance for the Great Lakes, for NRGC, Sierra Club, a whole bunch of groups that have been really deeply engaged on this, I think we look at this as, you know, we owe the Corps of Engineers a thank you for making clear the point that we've been saying all along, that you can make a physical separation that would stop the movement of invasive species through our waterways.
But that, they had like 8 different solutions.
Yeah.
And only 2 of them involved separating the waterways.
Yeah, a lot of them were sort of half measures that involved putting in poison chambers and kill chambers that would kill everything that happened to swim into the locks or into areas around locks. And we've spent a lot of money trying to clean up the Chicago River in the last few decades. That is completely counter to the direction we need to go to deal with this issue.
Mm-hmm. So, in essence, what made people's heads explode was this report came out and the price tag was through the roof. It really addressed a lot of things that are peripheral to the problem. It didn't really laser focus on this problem.
Yeah.
Folks said, what are you guys doing? And it seemed, according to some people from the articles I've read, that they're dragging their feet kind of and doing the bidding of certain business interests in doing this.
Well, I think intentionally or not, if you're crafting talking points for someone trying to advance the status quo and doing nothing, you lead with an insane price tag, an insanely long time period, and you bring in Deep Tunnel and the TARP project, which is something that really bedevils us here in Chicago. It's the system that we have for dealing with stormwater that's I don't know how many billions over budget, how many decades overdue, and their solutions.
It's supposed to be finished by 2029, okay?
Well, but they're not sticking to that date. That's actually an ongoing
sledding. So it might go even longer.
It may go longer. It's,
and they've been working on it since the 80s, haven't they?
Absolutely. And so if you want to freight a project with boondoggle implications, it's bring that one up in Chicago. And that was front and center in a lot of the discussion, was comparing it to in scope being similar to the Deep Tunnel project, which I think in the end makes it very difficult for decision makers to step up and take action here. And I think we're right now at a point where advocates in the region are trying to figure out ways that we can convene our decision makers and put together a reasonable, actionable, Midwestern thought through version of this that can really happen in the Chicago waterway system. So, like I said, we owe the Corps thanks for saying, yes, you can do this, and thanks for making it clear that we need to take over the process here in the Midwest.
Well, okay. You know, you guys are being real nice to the Corps here. I don't have to be. I'm the radio guy. But that's okay. No, I understand.
I'm being kind of facetious.
Oh.
But, yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't see the air quotes going on there. Okay.
Well, this is radio. I'm not supposed to.
But the consensus from what I understand, and actually, Michelle, you can jump in on this too, is that we need to separate those watersheds. We just need to have a physical barrier, and we're not talking about a fence and an electric fence. We're talking about separating, filling up the canal and just separating those. Is that correct among, you know, people, environmental groups and scientists to make this work?
We are hearing that from a number of people in that community. Shed's role in the conversation is really breaking down the issue for the public.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, they all have that foundational information and then can hear the arguments for either side. So we don't have a
position on this.
We don't have a position besides keep the carp out of the lakes. Whatever we have to do to keep the carps out of the lakes, that prevention is really key.
Well, I've got a position.
Okay. Good. Yay.
And it's one that's supported by a lot of scientists. And it says that if you want to stop this invasion, you want to stop these other invasive species from moving through the Chicago waterways, you need to physically separate those systems. And, you know, we did a few years back a study, sort of a back of the envelope, sort of a look at this with some with a bunch of engineers. And what we found was it's really not that hard to do. It's building a dam. It's not cheap. It's you know, hundreds of millions of dollars probably, but it's not $17 billion. It's not $15 billion. In the run-up after that, we started working with studio gang architects, Jeannie Gang, MacArthur Genius Fellow, one of the biggest stars in the architecture world. She's really interested in this issue and how we live with infrastructure in the United States. And so we ended up doing a book with her that visualized what one of those barriers could mean for the city of Chicago. And the barrier would be over near the Fisk Coal Plant on the South Branch of the Chicago River. And she visualized this really amazing rebirth of that area. And that, I think, is one of the core things we have to remember in Chicago. This is not a burden on Chicago. This is an unfortunate part of this debate has been other states piling on Chicago and Illinois. But this is an opportunity for us here in Chicago. We have failed and broken infrastructure. This is a way to bring lots and lots of money to deal with problems that we are going to have to fix one way or the other. And it's a way that we can bring new thinking and new amenities to people who live along portions of the Chicago River and really help stimulate those communities. I strongly suggest people go online, take a look at this really amazing bold vision from Studio Gang and from Jeannie Gang and a whole bunch of students at Harvard. The book is called Reverse Effect. It's a couple of years old now, but it is really a fascinating look at what dealing with this issue could look like and the opportunity it could be for the city of Chicago.
I can see Lisa already tracking that.
I've got it.
Reverse. So
and I'm a big fan of Jeannie Gang's. I mean, I think she's done some just amazing things. And to have her weigh in on this issue and actually take the time to put a book together, I want to read it.
It's spectacularly cool.
All because right, well, when it comes to some of these big issues, sometimes it feels like it's too big to solve. What are we going to do? And I'm not a person to throw up my hands, and I'm also not, you know, educated enough or smart enough to handle these issues. And it's good to see that there's some very leading thought on it.
And meanwhile, something I alluded to before the break, which is, and I've got this article up on my website as well, another Milwaukee Journal Sentinel article. Let me just read from this real quick. U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Brigadier General Margaret Burcham is quite comfortable that the threat of a Great Lakes Asian carp invasion is under control. Quote, "We've got our electric barrier," she said before a January 9th public hearing on the Army Corps' new study that says it will take at least a quarter century to erect barriers to block the rapacious fish from swimming into Lake Michigan. "And we're confident that it is doing the job." End quote. And that, yeah, and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel writes, no, it is not. Not if you believe a video obtained by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that was taken by federal biologists last summer. Just 1 3-minute clip reveals dozens of little fish swimming upstream through the swath of electrified water on the Chicago Sanitary and Ship Canal, only about 35 miles downstream from Chicago's lakeshore. And the fish aren't identified because they're on a sonar kind of thing?
Yeah, it's very hard to see what kind of fish they are from there. And it's likely that those are not Asian carp, but it points to a problem. And that is we are reliant on this last line of defense that repeatedly has shown itself not to be up to the job. It's lost power for long periods of time, for 13 minutes at a time. Mm-hmm. It's not what we want to be hanging our hat on.
So as we wrap this up, what we know that people need to go to the Shedd Aquarium and to their website and get educated.
Yes.
But what happens now? We've got this study that got dropped on us in January and people saying, well, we can't afford that. And a lot of it's not necessary or we should be doing it in another venue, not venue, but, you know, it's something that needs to be done anyway.
So first of all, the Corps is still taking comments on the study, the GLMRIS Great Lakes and Mississippi River Basin Study.
Interbasin Study.
Yes, Interbasin yes. Study. GLMRIS. Thank you.
GLMRIS.
So there are comments being taken on it. Who knows what's going to happen with those? I don't know. But it's important for the public to weigh in on these issues. And it's important for them to let their decision makers know that this is something they care about. There is this requires resolve from our decision makers to make something.
We're dithering, by the way. We're dithering. Our decision makers, I mean, I'm glad that Senator Durbin wanted this study to come out. But every day we don't have a barrier is another day in which the fish could end up in Lake Michigan, and it would be a catastrophe if it began to breed in Lake Michigan. I mean, we don't know that it will. Why are we even taking that chance? It's the precautionary principle. We do not practice that in America. We don't look at this and go, wow, that would be really disastrous if we let it happen. So let's not let it happen. No, we look at it and go, well, we're, you know, it might and it might not. If it happens, we'll fix it. What? That's craziness.
Well, I think it's arrogant.
Yeah.
And if I may, too, now that the weather's warming because it's 25 degrees today,
yes.
As we move into springtime in the summertime and people start going out to fish and recreate on the lakes, very important for people who are fishing to be mindful of their bait because there's a very strong concern that Asian carp could get into the lakes through a bait bucket.
Ooh.
Yes. Juvenile Asian carp look like common bait. So we ask that everybody be very careful with their bait. They dispose of their bait properly, which usually involves throwing your bait out into a dumpster or freezing your bait.
Mm-hmm.
But while all this conversation is going on about infrastructure for prevention, it's also important to make sure that every single one of us are also doing our own part.
Right, like transporting emerald ash borer in firewood. It's
exactly.
The same principle.
Be very careful.